Out, it's 9 minutes after three. The Paul Harris Show rolling along here in St. Louis, Missouri. Sun is out. We're not talking about baseball because it's just too depressing after this weekend. Let's talk about football. No, let's not do that. Let's talk about college football.
How about those Miami Dolphins?
I forgot. Dave Barry's here with his buddy Ridley Pearson. And
the powerhouse team, that Miami Dolphins.
From Miami. Ooh. Yeah. You know, you keep talking like that, you're going to get another hurricane. That's all I'm saying. Ridley is a St. Louisan, and Dave is a Miamian. And together they are part of...
We call them Miamese.
Miamese, I'm sorry. They are part of the Rock Bottom Remainders, who will be performing with Roger McGuinn, my last guest, tomorrow night at the pageant. And they're also doing a couple of other events here that have to do with a book that they have co-written called Peter and the Starcatchers. Now, I'll be honest with both of you. I haven't read the book.
Neither have we.
Well, we're leaving, Paul. Yeah.
But here's why I haven't read the book. I brought it home Friday afternoon.
You can't read. You're in radio. We know that.
Please, no secrets on the radio. I brought it home Friday afternoon after we got it from your publisher, and I walked in and handed it to my 10-year-old daughter.
Oh, that's
and good, she good match. Has now made it through, well, you can see, it looks like about 40% of the book that she's gotten through.
And that's a big, long book.
And
that
couldn't
is.
Put it down all weekend long.
All right.
This is what we like to hear.
Isn't that the greatest endorsement you can have
that
for
is,
a book?
Exactly.
I couldn't put it down. Either there's been some sort of super glue mistake, or she really, really enjoyed it.
That's been, you know, the great thing about having written a children's book. And both Ridley and I have written lots of books, but they're not children's books.
Mm-hmm.
And or young adult, anyway. And when we've gone on a book tour to talk about Peter and the Starcatchers, the adults ask questions like, "So, how did you work together? What was it like, you know, and that sort of thing? I mean, is there going to be a movie?" And the kids go, "Little kids raise their hands and go, will Peter get off the island?
Are we ever going to see the crocodile again?"
Totally into the story,
right? You know? Well, Ridley, that's how the book was created by your daughter,
is.
Right?
Yeah, I was reading Peter Pan, the original Jan Barry classic, to my daughter and. She was about five at the time, excuse me, and she put her hand across the page and said, "Yeah, but Dad, how did Peter meet Captain Hook in the first place?" As if I would have an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, but I thought someone should. And we were playing another reminder, you know, it's been a long day.
I've asked you not to drink before coming in here over and over and over again.
And so Dave and I decided to collaborate and write the prequel to Peter Pan.
I've never had a guest struck with the hiccups in the middle of the show.
I know.
It's that gin in the middle of the day. You know what I'm saying?
And so how do you write a book? You're in Miami. He's in St. Louis. How do you do that? How does that work out?
Well, have you heard this thing called the Internet?
Yeah.
It's going to be big.
I hear.
But anyway, we did it all.
If Bill Gates ever hears about this, it's going to be unbelievable.
We did it all by email. We each took some characters, and you'd write the chapter – with featuring your characters, but then you'd email it to the other guy,
mm-hmm.
and then he would do whatever he wanted to it,
mm-hmm.
and email it back,
mm-hmm.
and then you would do whatever you wanted, and we'd go back and forth until we were both satisfied. We called it ping pong.
Uh-huh.
This is also how Dostoevsky worked, and it was kind of a fascinating experience because we started out, I think, with two separate voices and different ideas of how it was going to work. And by pretty soon, maybe 10 chapters in, we were both writing much more like a third voice, somebody else.
Now, I know one of the hardest things when you're writing is to use that button on the keyboard that says delete. Particularly,
we used that one a lot.
With your own stuff? Or
no, with the other guy's stuff. That's what I'm
That's sometimes, with your own sometimes stuff. Ridley would send my chapters back with no words in it.
Here's what I liked, blank.
Chapter 8, blank.
But, you know, it's good because we're both story guys. I mean, we liked, you know, we wanted it to move along. I mean, when I was a kid reading books, I liked the plot. I like stuff to happen a lot. Ridley's the same way. And so if the other guy would in any way start to deviate from, you know, what's going to happen? What's something's going to happen here?
Mm-hmm.
That would be gone.
And, that deviator would typically be me.
Oh, yeah? You'd get a little bit into character development and nonsense?
I'd think about five ways this thing could go before we get to the point in the chapter, and Dave would cut all that out. And
I'd say, Ridley, time-traveling hamsters is a great idea, but not for this book.
Maybe the next.
He's always wanted to write a time-traveling hamster book. And
I'm still working on that.
You keep sticking pirates in there.
Yeah.
You actually have a fascination with pirates.
I'm proud to say I'm part of the reason why this nation, this great nation, celebrates Talk Like a Pirate Day. every September 27th. I'm sure you observe it here at KMOX.
Yeah, sure we do, Dave. Yeah. I'll play along.
September 19th.
The entire day consists of the arr.
Is it September 19th? I can't even remember what day talk like a pirate day.
That's why nobody celebrated on September 27th, because it's actually September 19th.
It's huge. So we were out on tour at the time, mm-hmm. And we would mention this, and half the crowd would clap and say they did it, and everybody shout out R. I mean, in just a couple years.
Nothing better than getting the kids around the tree that night, exchanging gifts, all sorts of
swords.
Pirate merchandise.
Ridley and I like talking like pirates. The problem is that we didn't know too many things that pirates would say beyond R. Mm-hmm. You know, so our conversations
avast.
We don't know what avast means either. You know, we're hoping it's not bad because we've said it to a lot of people. But we did find that we could say if you're talking like a pirate. And we would actually be wearing eye patches some of the time.
Yes. And on the book, in fact, you have yourself drawn as pirates.
That's
with
right.
An eye patch and one of those
radio, you see, you know.
Curly, waxy mustaches
but
as
you,
well.
You can call women wenches. Mm-hmm. And if you're a pirate, they're not that offended.
It's complimentary.
I wouldn't try it if I weren't being a pirate, however.
Uh-huh.
But it works.
And when you're a pirate, you also have to know something about being on boats. You live in St. Louis.
That's true.
You live in Miami, little bit closer to a major body of water. You'd have to go down to the Lake of the Ozarks, I suppose.
I sailed a lot as a child. Not that that helped this book at all.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
Did you know anything about the layout of ships of the
Believe it or not, and we actually looked up on the internet.
Is that right?
Yes!
We sent.
You went to Google pirate ships?
Yeah, they had it. We didn't even know there was an internet
schooners,
back when the pirates
merchant ships, all that.
Yeah, but we did. We had these various diagrams of ships that we used.
We would actually that was one thing that was contested quite heavily several times. I would say, "No, the cabin is back here," and they would say, "It is not. It's up here." And I'd send something to support my idea, and then Dave would send me six things that supported his idea.
Dear Ridley, that thing is called a sail.
Yeah. And it turned out Dave was right. Surprise.
Uh-huh. And when you're writing something like this, are you vetting it with your children? You both have young children.
Not at all.
No?
We do have children, but I didn't vet it at all with the kids.
Well, my daughter's 4 and a half, and I did explain to her that we were trying to tell the story of how Peter Pan got to be Peter Pan. I mean, if you think about sort of the beauty of the idea,
mm-hmm.
that when Paige asked really the question of where he came, you know, the book, the classic Peter Pan, begins with this kid who can fly, and he doesn't grow old, and he lives on an island with mermaids and pirates that are trying to kill him, and he's got this fairy flying around. And, you know, that just is given to you at the beginning.
Right.
And that's the world of Peter Pan. So we thought, well, how could you tell a story that would explain to a kid how a kid could get to be able to fly and not grow old? And that was really the
how did that world come to be?
Mm-hmm. So, and that's what the book is.
So it starts with a very normal kid, mm-hmm. and ends up with a guy who can fly and has a fairy on his shoulder and the whole bit.
Now, did you have to avoid the politically correct controversy of the Peter Pan story, which is the whole middle part with the Indians?
Yes, we did.
Well,
I mean,
we updated that.
They end up on an island. I'm not going to reveal too much of the plot, but a lot of it takes place on an island. Mm-hmm. There are natives on the island, but one of the really troublesome parts about the old Disney cartoon is the Indians thing is just embarrassing.
Yep.
And would never happen now. Our Indians they're not Indians. We call them, they're a tribe. We call them the Mollusk tribe.
The Mollusk tribe.
And their leader is a guy named Fighting Prawn. And he's a very well educated, intelligent guy.
Uh-huh.
And
speaks English.
Yeah. Speaks it quite well, better than the pirates do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we dealt with that.
So there'll be no protesting the book or anything like that.
We're hoping, unless there is an actual Mollusk tribe out there somewhere.
And I understand that, true or false, that your editor is actually a woman named Wendy?
That's correct.
That is true.
Well, we made her change her name legally.
And she had a sex change. But other than that, it started out fine.
It was a guy named Tim, and you said, we're only going to do this if we can have Wendy involved.
It's amazing what Disney can do. How do you think they get people to wear those goofy suits? You know, I mean, they're a tough company.
But now that the book is done, your daughter's still a little bit too young to read it. Your kid's a little older.
Yeah, and my daughter at the end of first grade, last April, we got sort of advanced proofs of the thing, and Paige went through it, and she was just so proud of herself. We read maybe 5 of the 70 chapters to her, and I still don't know if she liked it because her big deal was, I finished it! She got through this tome, you know. But it was great. Since then, she's gone on to read a bunch of big books. I think it broke that ice of I no longer have to read 30-page books with pictures.
And now you have to start writing more big books just to keep her happy. You realize what you've done here, don't
you? Well,
also,
she has to come up with another idea first. We have her in a room right now. We're feeding her. We're just not letting her out until she comes up with an idea.
The pressure's on, Paige. Yeah, you got to do something. Right. And by the way, you're not wrong when you say, wait, he's an author and he named his daughter Paige. His other daughter's name's Story.
That's correct.
That's correct. Yeah. So adopted, right?
Yes, the second is adopted.
Yeah. Here's the impression that I get from my daughter. And again, she's only about 40% of the way through, but loves the book. Came in with a giant smile on her face after reading the first little bit of it, and then ran into the room last night and said, "Dad, you won't get you'll never guess what the sail is made out of." This made a huge impression upon her. Yeah, okay. Would I spoil anything to tell my audience?
No.
The sail is made out of a giant black brassiere.
Well, it's shaped like one.
That's right.
It's called the ladies.
Think of all the wind you can hold in that.
I'm guessing that's a Dave Barry idea.
Now everybody guesses that. We had to have a way for the evil. There's a pirate out here named the Black Mustache, and he's after this treasure, which I won't talk too much about. It's very mysterious and very significant to the plot and why Peter can fly. Anyway, he's trying to catch the ship that he believes that treasure is on, which is called the Wasp, and it's the fastest ship there ever was. And he has a secret weapon, which the Wasp doesn't know he has, and it turns out to be this sail called the Ladies that he developed, which is a giant, giant black brassiere. And there's a wonderful picture of it mm-hmm. bearing down on the Wasp. Everybody thinks that was me. Mm-hmm. That was Ridley.
Really?
It was a modified Ridley. My idea was that these pirates, with their years of experience at various ports, might have some ladies' garments lying around and that they sewed them all into one giant spinnaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as I recall, that's how I sent it off to Dave. And it came back a giant black brassiere. The difference between St. Louis and Miami, right there.
There you go. Yeah. Let me take a break. We'll come back in just a moment. The book is called Peter and the Star Catchers. If your daughter's anything like mine, she'll absolutely love it. If your son is anything like my daughter, you may want to consult a physician. Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, they're also in the Rock Bottom Remainders tomorrow night at the pageant. There's lots more to do here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Adam in the studio here with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, who are performing with the Rock Bottom Remainders tomorrow night, also doing an appearance tonight, a book signing at the St. Louis Public Library at 1301 Olive Street with their new book called Peter and the Star Catchers, a giant hit in my house, and I'm sure it will be in yours. And they've also got another event coming up on Wednesday night that we'll talk about in a moment. But during the break, Dave has discovered the guitar, the beautiful Gretsch guitar left here by our engineer, Paul Grunhauser, and has decided that I could talk him into playing a little ditty here.
Well, this is yes, okay. Is that okay?
Does that work, Paul?
Okay. That's me playing the guitar.
That's Dave. Oh, by the way, before you play, you know I had Roger McGuinn in here last hour. Roger said you're not as bad as you say you are.
Well, Roger's very kind.
And what a compliment that is. You're not as bad as you say you are. He didn't say, boy, he's really good. He said he's not as bad as he says he is.
That's because when Roger's on the stage playing with us, my guitar is turned down to -7. It's actually sucking back notes that I played earlier in the night into the amp.
It's so one step above air guitar.
No, none of my notes will ever touch any of Roger's
notes. No.
But anyway, we do a song that I wrote. It's, I believe, the only song ever written to a proofreader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Proofreading Woman. It's a literary song.
Okay.
So we're going to do just one verse and one chorus, and you have to help with the chorus. You ready?
I suppose.
Okay, ready? Proofreading Woman. Well, some men like a woman with a beautiful body. Some men like a woman with a pretty face. I like a woman with a big vocabulary and every single little comma in place. I'm in love.
He's in love
with a proofreading woman. Gonna love her till the day I die. She's got a big dictionary, real good grammar. She never says between you and I. No, no. She never says between you and I. That's
well, where's the rest of the song?
That's no, we just we're just doing you, giving you just a taste,
the radio version,
a taste
sampler. It's like I can't get the 99 cents on iTunes. I can get the whole song. Wow! All right, let me take a break while we put the guitar away. We'll come back with more with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. It's the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. The Paul Harris Show, rolling along with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. Dave, known for his column in the Miami Herald and many, many books that he's written, including a couple of novels. And Ridley, who's written, how many novels have you written now, Ridley?
Is it 20.
Like 20 or so crime novels? They've gotten together to work on a book called Peter and the Star Catchers, which is out now from Hyperion Books, and my daughter absolutely loves it. And they're involved in the Rock Bottom Remainders. The reason they're really hoping for rain tomorrow night is because They happen to be playing their gig at the pageant the same night as the first Cardinal home World Series game since 1987.
Can you believe the Cardinals didn't check with us? That's what gets me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We would have checked with them.
Yeah.
But we had our day long before they had theirs.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
And you think that gives you some sort of precedence in this town?
I guess not. No, we're happy for the Cardinals. Yeah, we really are.
You know what we should do? We should pump up the fact that it's for charity.
It's all
for the kids.
It's for America Scores. We're starting a branch of America Scores here in St. Louis, which will be called St. Louis Scores. And it's a soccer/literacy program for inner city kids. A lot of these schools have lost afternoon sports, and this program brings in an afternoon soccer program. The kids play Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but they also stay Thursday and Tuesday afternoons and write poetry and rap lyrics and anything that interests them so that they get reading more. They learn team camaraderie and the team sports, and it's been enormously successful around the country. It started out with 38 students about 8 years ago in Washington, D.C., and it's crossing the 4,000 student mark this year. So it's in 12 cities, and we hope to bring it to St. Louis.
All right. I figured out how you can support this cause and the Cardinals in the World Series at the same time. You stay home to watch the World Series tomorrow night, but you buy a ticket for the Rock Bottom Remainders. Even if you don't go, you guys don't care if the crowd shows up, do you?
We want the crowd. But we would love for them to buy tickets.
The other option would be for us to go to the stadium and play there.
Why don't you do the national anthem tomorrow?
It would be better than Steven Tyler. Or something.
Yeah, you couldn't be worse than Steven Tyler, could you? Man, was that bad. Although I thought James Taylor did a great job last night.
What does he not do a great job on?
That's true. That's true. I got to ask a Dave Barry question here. What do you mean you're quitting? Slacker. 30 years you've been working now. You're going to stop now?
Well, I'm not going to stop writing, but I am going to stop writing my column for at least a year. I've had that deadline hanging over me forever. And I got some other stuff to do. Ridley and I are going to do another Peter books. And I just want to spend some time, a little more time with the family and relax a little bit more.
And maybe by then, after that year, you will have solved the low flush toilet problem?
I don't think so. And until we, track down and hang the people responsible for me. There was a time this country had toilets that were the envy of the world. We had toilets that could suck down a mature sheep in this country. And then Congress, not to name names, but Congress, with all due respect, it's a group of idiots, passed this law.
I don't think there's any respect due.
Yeah. Where we now can flush like a molecule at a time. I don't want to get too explicit. We all know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh,
we're
yeah.
saving water by flushing 30 times,
Right, yep.
So anyway, don't get me started.
Every time I see one of those industrial toilets, the one with the handle that you only kick.
Yes, you never would want to touch that. You can actually see the germs on it waving at you.
Right.
Come here, big boy. Touch me now.
But when you do finally kick it, you don't even rest your foot on it. It's really more of a violent karate move, I think.
I don't even use my own foot. I get somebody from another stall. Would you kick my –
But they do have the most satisfactory flushing sound and technology
because
I've ever
they heard. Work. They're powerful. When you knew there are people who smuggle toilets in from Canada.
What?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a second. We can't get flu vaccine in Canada.
We can't get prescription drugs.
Neither presidential candidate has addressed this issue.
But you can get toilets.
But it's a black market getting those toilets.
Well, it's a white market.
Yeah. depending on the color of your bowl, you're exactly right. All right, let's move on to other things here. During the break, I was talking with Dave about having worked with our buddy John Max, who's been a contributor to this show for an untold number of years. You worked with him a couple years ago as a writer for the Academy Awards. Was that when Steve Martin was the host?
Right. Steve Martin was the host.
Talk about that experience just a little bit. Not necessarily about John, but about writing for the Oscars and working with Steve and these guys.
Well, it was amazing to me. I'd never met Steve Martin. I had exchanged emails with him for years. And we sent each other our books and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of knew him that way. And he sent me an email, said, would you like to come? I'm hosting the Academy Awards. Would you like to be one of the writers? And my wife was the one who actually leaned over my shoulders and typed yes, because she always and literally 3 months before I had written a single joke, she had shoes and a dress and a purse.
She was going to the Academy Awards.
Exactly.
That's all she cared about.
I wasn't going to get a choice in this matter.
Yep.
But I was intimidated. I mean, when you write alone in a room. You can have all the time in the world to get the joke just the way you want it to be before anybody sees it.
Or before you email it back to Ridley.
Right. But in this case, I was going to go into a room with guys like John Max and Bruce Valanche and people who've been forever in the in L.A. sitting in rooms writing jokes for comedians, mm-hmm. and it was and Steve Martin, yep. you know, sitting, so the first
and you have to please Steve Martin
exactly.
and give him material where he'll say that's good enough for me to say with my own lips,
and so I was a nervous wreck when I got there. And I say the first hour I didn't say a word. Just sat in the room. You know, how does this work? I don't even know how this works. It turns out these are the most giving, generous people you can imagine because they're used to this situation. Whoever comes up with an idea is not going to get credit for it. Steve Martin is going to say the joke.
Right.
So what you quickly realize the dynamic of the room is everybody wants it to be the best possible joke and they want Steve Martin to like it. And so if you have an idea that's even halfway funny, somebody will jump in and make it a little funnier and then somebody else will make it a little – and after a while you get to the point you realize you could just say setups. You didn't even have to have a complete joke. Just like – you know, or you could say, this is the world's stupidest idea, but, you know, and then somebody would do something with it. And Steve Martin was very gracious. You know, everything – we learned that yeah meant no. Whatever you'd say, he'd go, oh, yeah, that meant no. I'm not going to write
it. Yes?
What yes was you heard tap, 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 which was him putting it into his laptop.
Uh-huh.
You know, he would write it down.
Yep.
And then but by the end of the time, we met for weeks and weeks. We all got to know each other really well. And by the end of it, I just felt like these were my friends. And truly, but it's the night of the show, it's kind of hard to remember who wrote which joke. And everybody's just so excited that it's working out.
Yep.
It was a great experience for me. And John Max is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never, ever seen a guy who could come up with more jokes in a short time on any topic.
Well, you wrote a column about your experience that I remember vividly because you named John the Joke Machine.
Yeah.
I've known him 15 years longer than you have, and you're the one who came up with a name for him, even though he's been doing these jokes on my show and, of course, writing for Jay all these years. You said in your column that if John Max were to die right now, he would still come up with jokes for at least another half hour.
Yeah, exactly. If you were on a plane going down, you know, if the pilot said, you know, we're going to crash, I'm sorry. You know, I'd want to be sitting next to Max because he would be coming up with jokes all the way to the ground.
That's
he's
right.
Just under pressure. The man is unbelievable.
And he works on the Oscars and the Emmys, and he's kind of the go-to guy for the – he's even worked on things like the World Stunt Awards. And one of our running gags with him is that wherever he goes, he's always annoying major stars to the point where – you know, there have been a couple of restraining orders. I don't want to mention any names, but one of them rhymes with Mysand. First name Marbra. Okay? We can't go any further than that.
That explains some of the jokes that we didn't use on the – I was going to say, that was the other really fun thing about being in that room is like all those people know everybody in Hollywood and they know everything.
Right.
And so I would say 90% of the jokes that people come up with are purely for the entertainment of the people in the room because, you know, Steve Martin can't say them on television.
Yeah, they cannot possibly be broadcast worldwide.
Man, they were funny, you know. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And your wife did get to go to the Oscars?
She did, and she got to sit in Steve Martin's seat. So she's actually in the telecast. Was the high light of her life. As
wow.
As
wow, that's terrific.
I just had to keep her away from Johnny Depp.
Well, I think that's a pretty good idea for all of us, come to think of it. Let me do a break. We'll come back with more. Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. Their book is Peter and the Star Catchers. And tomorrow night, they will be at the pageant with the Rock Bottom Remainders. Tonight, they will be at the St. Louis Public Library Central Branch at 1301 Olive Street. 7 o'clock, guys? Is that what time it is? They're doing a book signing. You can pick up this new book for your kids or for yourself. And we'll come back with more in just a moment. The Paul Harris Show on KMOX. It's the Paul Harris Show with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. Nobody heard what you just said, Dave.
I said, is it really true that news happens anywhere, anytime? Let's suppose news happens like right now in Pyongyang, you know, China or something.
We go right to our Pyongyang bureau chief. We break right into – we have an ISDN line to his home.
I'm just checking.
We break right in. Absolutely.
I'm just checking.
Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, co-authors of Peter and the Star Catchers and members of the Rock Bottom Remainders. And I should also point out one of them is a presidential candidate. You still running this year, Dave?
Of course, I'm always running.
How many years is it? How many times have you run so far?
Whatever. How many they got? And I just want to say that unlike, you know, the so-called leading contenders with their focus groups and their changes of positions, everything.
Yes.
I agree with you.
That's
everyone,
your platform?
Everyone listening, I agree with you. And if you change your mind, I will change my mind too.
Have you changed the way people in your home state of Florida vote? I got to tell you, you know, I am Jewish, so by law, I have elderly relatives in your state, and I think that they were responsible for 2000.
This year, we're going to print photographs of the candidates' faces right on the ballot.
Uh-huh.
You'll vote by poking out your candidate's eyeball. We think. Even the Florida candidate, Florida voters will be able to follow that. That's our hope.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to have a messy time around?
I do. I think it's going to be bad. I just think it is. I think it's not necessarily going to be Florida, but mm-hmm. I think there's going to be challenges in more than one state. I think more than one state where both candidates are going to declare victory. I think there's going to be lawyers coming in by parachute. I hope this doesn't happen, but the potential is there.
Is Florida just desperate to get this chip off its shoulder from 2000?
We want some other state to screw up.
Come on, Ohio, be an idiot, please. Yeah.
Or I think we should start just taking electoral votes away from states. You know, like if Florida messes up again, I'm sorry, we're going to let Belgium vote for you. We're going to find somebody who can vote.
I think that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would guess that Schwarzenegger being elected governor of California gave you hope.
I know for a while there, everybody was laughing at California, but then, you know, they seemed to work it out. Now everybody's back to laughing at
Florida.
Thanks a lot.
Although our sympathies are with you because of all the hurricanes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was bad.
Everything okay at the Barry compound?
We didn't get hit because I bought a generator. I bought a generator. So immediately the day I got it, Ridley was there.
Yeah. And the storm moved.
It was deflected by my generator.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
More power than Pat Robertson in moving hurricanes.
Exactly. Yeah, Pat wasn't steering this one, apparently. Or
just that
hit me.
Big financial hit. Yeah. The minute you spend it, the hurricane leaves.
Yeah. I've got to ask you one question about the book before you go. Peter and the Starcatchers, a prequel to Peter Pan.
Right.
Have you talked about which young athletic female gymnast you'd like to play the lead in the movie? Because Kathy Rigby, Mary Lou Retton, they've all done it so far.
If there is a movie, it's going to be animated. It's going to be like a Shrek, 3D animated, if it ever gets that far, because there was a Peter Pan movie last year that didn't do very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hollywood, the minute that happens, Hollywood just stays away from whatever they – so they happen to do live action.
Mm-hmm.
So Hollywood's completely off the idea of live action, which I actually think is a mistake. But we did meet – was it Kathy Rigby's ladder jumper?
I'm sorry, her what?
The way you make Peter Pan fly on stage, somebody backstage has a rope and they jump off a ladder.
And we met the father of the guy who did that for Kathy Rigby.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. What's that?
There's no business like show business.
And on that note, we'll wrap it up. Dave and Ridley will be at the Central Branch of the St. Louis Public Library tonight at 7, signing copies of Peter and the Starcatchers. And tomorrow night, if you can't find anything better to do, they'll be at the pageant with the Rock Bottom Remainders. Thanks, guys. It's
Thank
a pleasure.
You, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson on the Paul Harris Show. This is KMOX.